So let's look back at another marketing revolution that took, well, years ago, it took white America by storm.
Now let's go to a little town in New Jersey where things are really popping. Yes, there's a party going on at Mrs. Betty Martin's house. It's a Tupperware party, and it's really fun. The girls get together and meet their old friends and make some new ones. Then there's a demonstration by one of the Tupperware dealers who lives in your community.
Yes, a Tupperware party from the 1950s, selling plastic containers by using sedate suburban tea party affairs to kickstart the word of mouth of the American housewife, the engine of the U.S. consumer economy. The face of and force behind the Tupperware party was a young single mom from Georgia, short on formal education but big on ambition, a pioneering businesswoman who was leaning in even though she didn't even know it. Brownie Wise was the marketing genius. Earl Tupper was great with plastics and manufacturing, but had a lampshade on his head when it came to parties and marketing. Brownie Wise is the character in the middle of Bob Keeling's new book, Life of the Party, the remarkable story of how Brownie Wise built and lost a Tupperware party empire.
The product was so ubiquitous, and it really did seem to work, didn't it? It kept food fresh. It saved our parents money back when money was pretty tight when they were raising kids. So, yeah, that was definitely on my radar, even as a kid.
And it was just straight ahead door-to-door marketing, not unlike, you know, selling vacuum cleaners. But what was it about Tupperware and Tupperware parties and Brownie Wise that made this difference, set it apart?
Because, John, back in her day, we're talking late 40s, early 50s, this really was the forerunner of all of that. She came out of Stanley, the brooms and the cleaning products, rather dowdy and utilitarian. And then all of a sudden she comes upon these beautiful pastel containers. Remember, plastic was sort of seen as brittle and kind of cheap. Now all of a sudden you have this translucent, flexible product. And she comes up with the genius idea of having these feminized home parties where women could get out. It could be a social event, but at the same token, women would almost compete to buy the product. So it was kind of a perfect storm, really, for this product's success back in the 50s.
And explain exactly what would happen. Would people bring their leftovers, or would they just show up?
Usually what would happen is for a dealer to try to convince somebody to have a party, they would show how, look at these carrots. I've had them in this container for several days, and look at how this works. And I'll bet you've just been using a shower cap over a bowl, and by now these carrots would be mush. So look, this product works. So that's how they would convince someone to either host a party, have a party, attend one. And then they didn't necessarily need the food to be in the bowls at that point, but Brownie had a genius way of demonstrating the product. She'd actually fill it up with liquid, then seal it, then bounce it across the terrazzo tile floors that are so common here in Florida, and women's eyes would just get as big as saucers, realizing, wow, this thing really works.
And that's why a Tupperware party has way more excitement than a Ziploc bag party or a aluminum foil or waxed paper party.
Yeah, I mean, the bedrock of it all, John, was that the product really worked and it really did save people money. So it generated a lot of confidence in the dealers that they knew they had something special here that people could only get through the exclusivity of the home party.
How big were Tupperware parties?
They could have 8, 10, 12, 15 people. It sort of varied. But it was such an interesting thing to look at the photographs. There's one on the back of my book, and you can see how women are all dressed up to the nines, and what a great social occasion this was. I think in this photo I'm looking at, there's about a dozen women there, and the product is all lined up just so. And that was really a big deal too, John, was making sure that the product was displayed properly so it was within easy reach so it could all be demonstrated and the women could be awed with each different product and how it could be of use in their homes.
Can you explain the hats to me?
Well, John, they also like to have a lot of fun at those parties, and they would have certain games. And people would compete for prizes and that type of thing. But there was also a very shrewd notion behind that is, you know, this was low pressure. This was not a high pressure sales type tactic. But once their guard was down a little bit, it was almost like they would compete. They'd see Mary buying this and that. So, okay, well, I need to buy that too. And by the end of this party, they had racked up some pretty impressive sales.
When the economic fortunes turned for these two, what happened and what was it like on the way down?
What's so interesting, John, is there's so much intrigue involved here. You know, as Brownie got more successful, and she was getting lots of recognition. She was the first woman on the cover of Business Week in 1954. And there was a significant amount of jealousy. And in the book, I actually talk about a group of distributors who decided to get together and unionize. And some of the biggest ones wanted to overthrow her. And so Brownie and her managers actually had to go and employ hidden microphones and things like that to find out who were the ringleaders and confront them. And so it was, there was sort of that jealousy going on. And then there was, you know, Brownie starting to get enamored with her own publicity, getting her eye off the ball a little bit. And I think, too, that they had just reached a point by about 1956, 57, where, you know, they had thousands of dealers. And it was just every time you're having to come up with a new contest or something to keep them motivated, keep them selling. And I think they just reached a peak of sales. And I think normally you'd go into a valley there. But Tupper was, he was put off by some of the things he saw Brownie doing. She wrote her own self-help book called Best Wishes and published that in 1957. He didn't like that. He wanted his baby to be the star, not Brownie. And then by 58, he had decided he wanted to sell his company and decided it probably would not be best to have a strong-willed, strong-speaking, independent woman at the helm to suitors of the day, the Mad Men day.
Bob Keeling, thank you so much.
Thank you, John.
Bob Keeling is author of Life of the Party, the remarkable story of how Brownie Wise built and lost a Tupperware party empire.